Well, you can say hi if you want to.
Hi, this is
howdy.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, this is Greg LeMond. Welcome to the VeloCast.
Nice, really nice, yeah.
Hello everyone and welcome to the VeloCast. With the biggest Grand Tour of them all only just around the corner, we'll be looking ahead to what the Grand Bucle has to offer us this year. Later in the show, we'll be focusing on the riders who'll be contesting the jersey classifications. But first, let's turn our attention to the route of the 2019 Tour de France. Donning the elbow patches of the geography teacher, our journey across the 3 weeks starts in Belgium before taking in such highlights as seven flat stages, five hilly stages, as ASO likes to call them, seven mountain stages with five mountaintop finishes, one individual time trial stage and one team time trial stage. Now pay attention, class, as there will be an exam at the end. And Galloway, yes, you Galloway, take your hand out of there, you go blind, boy.
How do you know where my hands are? We record without video, unless you've hacked my computer in some Machiavellian scheme.
No, I wouldn't know how to do that kind of thing. Anyway, looking to the route, what do you think, John?
I think it would have been perfectly suited to a certain Mr. Christopher Froome. It's a fascinating route. I think we've got one of the relative rarities in the modern era for the Tour, and that it's really, really suited to a climber. You know, there's much less emphasis on time trials than there has been, which of course you'll know really, really disappoints me because I love me a time trial. But with the range of riders who are lined up to contend, and it's not just one or two, as we usually say, you know, you're not looking at maybe, you know, a straight fight between Chris Froome and Nairo Quintana, which we might have been talking about had it been a slightly different course and if Chris had still been here. I think you've got a raft of people who can contend not just for the podium, but actually for the win. And I've got three or four people who are almost in equal footing for me as favourites. The other thing is, it's particularly in the final weekend moved towards those short stages, which have given us so much excitement in all the Grand Tours which have featured them. And I think once the fatigue's in the legs, those short stages are going to encourage some aggressive riding that maybe a longer, more vicious stage might have discouraged. But the big thing for me is there's a whole bunch of stages where, and it's that corny old cliche, you might not win the Tour, but you could easily lose it. You know, there's stages where you could make one mistake, have an unfortunate mistimed crash, go back for a feed at the wrong time, and if the other people are absolutely on top of their game and have their tactical heads on, they could rip the race apart and put somebody who we'd previously considered to be a contender in trouble. So I think we're on for an absolutely banging Tour de France in 2019.
And when I was looking through the route before recording this show, I kind of split the stages that I was interested in into two different columns, really. One was, of course, key stages that the GC guys absolutely have to be on their game for. The other one is what I've called the possibility for sneaky time gain stages, where the GC guys essentially have to not be necessarily on their game to win the stage or gain time, but just be aware that there are certain factors that could come into play where they need to pay attention to who could get away just for a few seconds here or there. There's also this new idea that ASO have brought in this year of bonus seconds, you know, at certain points throughout the stages. I believe there's eight of those spread throughout the race. So those kind of go into these stages that, as I say, I've called kind of sneaky time gain stages. And the other factor that may play into those is one that neither ASO or anybody will be able to factor in until we actually get to the day is for weather. Because in some of the areas that we're visiting, the weather could play a factor, you know, specifically in the north where you could have echelons formed because of, you know, the wind coming across from the North Atlantic, or indeed in the south with the Mistral blowing. And there's one particular stage down in the south where I think that could be a factor. But we kick everything off in Belgium, as I said, with a couple of days which are really a celebration of possibly the greatest cyclist of all time, Eddie Merckx.
Yep, it's the 50th anniversary of Eddie's first victory in the Grand Boucle, and they pass through his home village town on both of the first 2 days. Stage one is a road stage. There's no prologue this year, 194.5 kilometres long, and a sprinter stage. I mean, you look at the profile, it looks like it's pretty much pan flat. There's some famous climbs thrown in there. You know, you've got the Mur de Grammont and the Bossberg. But it's going to be a sprinter stage. You know, this is no rerun of the Tour de Flanders. It's a tribute to Eddie Merckx in road form. Brussels is really nice. I mean, for a lot of people in the UK, it's so tied to the EU that they tend to think about it as a big home of bureaucracy. But it's a beautiful northern European city, and you're going to get that classic scenery throughout the day. And it's just going to be a nice start to the tour. It's good that it pays tribute. But really, it's stage two, where this early on you've already got some GC action, because it's your beloved team time trial.
It is, and finishing beside the Atonium, which, if anybody's been to Brussels, I'm sure they will have seen. Really, really odd structure, but it's cracking to look at. And as you say, John, I really like a team time trial. I'm not sure that certain GC riders are fans of them, because you can be absolutely hampered by your team. So the GC guys need to be aware of what, I mean, it's a fairly significant length of team time trial as well, 27.6 kilometres. So there's a lot to play for here. But I do understand the GC guys not being too enamoured with the team time trial.
Do you know the funny thing is this year, though, so often the argument about a team time trial is that the guys who are GC contenders, who are good time trialists and who have a team which is packed with good time trialists, have an unfair advantage, if you like, compared to the climbers. And I've usually poo-pooed that by saying, you know, they should bring a team that can do it then. You know, they know it's part of the race. This year, a lot of the guys that we expect to see on the front absolutely hammering it on the climbs are also members of the strongest team time trial squads. You know, Mitchell and Scott with Adam and Simon Yates, and God help us try to tell the difference between the two of them, are up there with the favourites for this stage with me. Egan Bernal and Geraint Thomas are in Team Ineos. They've got one of the strongest teams. So it's not a case where we've got a wee plucky climber who's going to have to take it to the time trial machines later in the race. I think we're going to see the guys we expect to be in the front in the high mountains absolutely in the race in this team time trial. So I think it's not something that's going to bias the GC in the way that there's been the propensity for it to do so in the past. It's actually going to be the guys that we expect to see at the front. Their teams are going to do well in this. It's going to be a good indicator of form as well, to see how well they hang in, how well they come through in the rotation, what length of pools they take. We'll get an early indication of who's really on song for the start of the tour.
Yeah, definitely. Another team I want to kind of throw in there for reasons that I'll come to later in this talk of the course itself is Deceuninck and Quickstep, and one particular rider within that team. But as I say, I'll kind of come to that.
Ooh, a tease.
A tease for later in the show. For me, the next stage that I want to kind of focus on is on July the 10th, stage 5, which is Saint-Dié-des-Vosges to Colmar. This is one that I've kind of filed under that sneaky time game thing. Now, I've looked at the slightly long range forecast, and it is set to rain in the Colmar region that day. And the reason I wanted to highlight this one is the last quarter of stage 5, we've got the opportunity here for somebody to nip off the front, or a group of riders to nip off the front and possibly get some time here, because we've got some interesting climbs, the Trois Pies and the Saint-Château on the run into the finish.
Yeah, you ever been to Colmar?
I have, yeah, really nice.
It's like Disneyland Freiburg. I mean, it's super scenic, and anything around the Vosges is always interesting. Heavy, sticky roads, the chance to make a breakaway stick. And I think this is exactly the kind of stage I was talking about where you're going to have to be on top of your game. You know, pay attention all the time. This is where, you know, Bradley Wiggins was talking about it during the Giro. It's the day-by-day stress of being in the right place all the time that is, you know, part of the skill set of a Grand Tour winner. And this is going to demand that in full. I expect a breakaway to stick anyway. You know, that that trio of climbs as you approach the finish from 109 kilometres on is enough for, you know, people to force the pace, maybe break up an earlier breakaway into a more elite group, or, you know, if you're one of the GC guys and you want to have a dig, you know, maybe you're Vincenzo Nibali. This is the kind of stage where he might have a bit of an exploratory dig to see if he can make any mischief as much as anything else. You know, part of Nibali's brief for this tour for me is to make mischief for the others as much as to act in his own behalf. There's a big day coming after it as well. You know, it's one of those days where you have to spend the energy to be in the right place. But equally, you know, you look at the following day, it's going to be brutal as well. So do you work too hard and compromise your chances the next day? It's only stage five. And I fully expect somebody to lose enough time that we'll think, well, that's their tour buggered, isn't it?
Yeah, and to that key stage then that follows it, stage six on July 11th, Mulhas to La Planche de Bellefille. We, of course, remember La Planche de Bellefille for Chris Froome's win there a few years ago. It's a 10-kilometre climb that goes up to 20% near the top of it.
Yeah, remember, it's so steep at the top that the riders actually appear as if from nowhere over the horizon if you're on the finish line camera.
That's right. The finish line camera just shows, you know, you can tell who's going to win by whose head appears first. 157 kilometres the route, and we've got four categorised climbs, and it's the Tour's first summit finish on stage six. So I think, you know, that combination of stage five and stage six is going to be, I think, certainly the key to unlocking the first week. Now, it'll be interesting to see how the GC guys play it. But certainly, as you say, John, they've got to have to watch themselves as to what happens on stage five and how it then, you know, features for what they're about to do on stage six. But definitely, the 11th of July is one that you have to watch, because it is going to really play a part in how the entire tour itself shapes out.
No, absolutely. And, you know, we've got L'Equipe essentially talking up the chance of a French victor for the first time since, you know, famously Bernardino. I think we're going to see, you know, we're going to see whether the French challenge is a reality this year. You know, there's less time trialling than there's been for years and years. There's lots of climbing, there's lots of stages that suit the kind of attacking style of Romain Bardet. But I think this day I'm going to watch to see if Thibaut Pinot has a dig. You know, this is the region he comes from. If he's on form, if he's part of that French dream, you know, there was the picture of him and Bardet on the front of L'Equipe last week, I think. This is where Thibaut Pinot will want to start to make his mark. We won't see massive gaps in this stage, you know, because everybody will still be fresh. And although it's a hard climb, you know, it's going to be a handful of seconds, but people will want to make a statement. And I really want to see how Thibaut Pinot does in this stage. And we'll also have a start of an answer to that dilemma that Sky have. You know, Geraint Thomas is looking better before he crashed out than I expected him to. He's still looking, you know, untested. We don't know what kind of form he's been in compared to previous years. Is he going to be in the stellar form of last year? Whereas Egan Bernal has looked absolutely magnificent, but we don't know whether he's up to the test of 3 weeks, although I think he is. We can talk about that later. So this hard test after the difficult day before will be the first time we're starting to get some answers about, you know, the French, about the Team Ineos thing, about Alejandro Valverde. You know, is Benjamin Button up for the job? You know, there's all sorts of questions that La Planche de Bellefille is going to answer.
To the next stage I want to talk about then, stage 8 on July 13th, Mâcon to Saint-Étienne, 200 kilometres, and it's an almost never-ending series of up and downs all the way through. And what we get from that is almost 4,000 metres of vertical gain, no fewer than 7 categorised climbs, and that the last of them is another one of those bonus point sections that I was talking about earlier, designed as ASO have it to kind of tempt the GC favourites to attack. The reason I wanted to highlight Deconinck Quickstep for the team time trial is I can see Julien Alaphilippe mounting another charge for King of the Mountains this year. But I think also at this point, I would expect, and you mentioned Pino a moment ago, so it'll be either one of those two for me, but if Julien Alaphilippe isn't already leading the race by this point, I would be looking for him to try and grab the jersey so that he can be resplendent in yellow for Bastille Day the following day.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at the profile, it suits an Alaphilippe perfectly. You know, if you had to design a stage that would suit him with a finish that'll suit him, it would be this day. There's no particularly big climbs, but if you look at the profile, you're right. There's not an inch of flat in the entire day. And it's a long day. We're already on stage 8, so there's going to be some fatigue in the legs. And Deconinck Quickstep have, let's face it, a really disappointing Giro to make up for. I think we'll see a far better Elia Viviani than we did at the Giro. But for this stage, I think you're right. Julien Alaphilippe, if he's still in touch and with a chance of the yellow jersey, he's going to want to wear it. And this stage has his name written all over it. So, yeah, good shout. Good shout.
So stage 13 then, the only individual time trial of the race on July the 19th, and that's down in Po.
Yeah, not even very technical. I mean, there's the odd interesting corner, but what's the high point? 312 metres or something? But it starts at nearly 200 metres, so the climbing's almost insignificant. We've got to look at this point to the GC guys.
The point at which Romain Bardet loses the Tour?
Or Thibaut Pinot, or one of, you know, either of the French guys could just bin it on this day. And I don't mean crash, I just mean lose enough time that they have their work cut out. This is where we're going to get a proper indication of who's in form. Nairo Quintana, I mean, people like Spooky Joke on Twitter, who I've had a lot of chat about time trials and all sorts of stuff with over the years, reckons Quintana's actually going to have a pretty good Tour this year, and I just don't. So this is where we find out if I'm right or he's right. It's the time gaps, because it's only 27 kilometres, aren't going to be massive. It's more an indication of form. If somebody does drop absolute buckets of time, then I think we can fairly safely write them off. Because, you know, there's nowhere to hide in a time trial. There's a reason it's called the Race of Truth. And if you're a GC contender, you have to perform. And again, the interest for me at this one is Geraint Thomas and Egan Bernal. You know, this is a point where the leadership of Team Ineos, if it's still in doubt, could just flip. You know, if one guy performs far better than one of the others. And I think the team have genuinely gone in regarding them as equal contenders. So I don't think there's any favouritism. But I wish it was a longer time trial. I wish it was more technical. I wish it was hilly. I'll still watch it because we are going to see who's on form and who's not.
Stage 15 then, Le Mont de Foix on the 21st of July, 185 kilometres, and there are three mountain passes here, the Col de Montségur, Port de l'Air, and the very, very steep Mur de Perguer that hits 18% before the descent to the base of Plat d'Albi.
Yeah, brutal day. And remember, it follows the day over the Col de Soir and the finish on the Tourmalet, which is the first time over 2,000 metres. That's day before, in stage 14 on the 20th, is where we'll find out if Alejandro Valverde is going to succumb to his habitual weakness over 2,000 metres. But the Tourmalet, I think you're right to highlight the following stage. It's not quite as difficult as this brutal stage 15. You know, the climbs aren't as big, but with the Tourmalet and the Soulard and the legs from the day before and the time trial, somebody's going to lose time, you know, really, really hand over fist in this stage, I think. That penultimate climb is perfect for somebody who's got legs to attack. And the one thing that if we look at all of the contenders who are there this year, and people will no doubt, you know, levy the, oh, they're boring, they're killing the race, and Team Ineos is, you know, as the race progresses or whatever. But if you look at Egan Bernal, he can't help but attack. You know, he reminds me so much of Contador in that way. He attacks even when there's no real need to attack, just because it's in his legs. Geraint Thomas last year absolutely blew the race apart with some thrilling attacking racing. You know, Vincenzo Nibali, Alejandro Valverde, Thibaut Pinot, Roman Bardet, all of these guys, if they've got the legs, will attack. And this is the kind of stage that's going to suit them. You know, that Mur de Piquer, I can't even pronounce it, but I'll try harder next time during the race. It's a perfect launching post, and I can see two or three GC guys working off the front and trying to attack their opposition. It's going to be a proper day's bike racing, and if the weather is, God help us, wet, or, you know, 40, 44 degrees as it's been recently in France, it's going to be a day to remember. I mean, you're going to have to get your nutrition right, your clothing selection's going to have to be right, and, you know, it's an easier day the next day, but they're going to have to do some stuff. You know, we're halfway through the tour. The race is going to start to take shape, and because of the kind of riders, I genuinely think we're going to see all hell break loose in stage 15.
Yeah, I agree. And we've not even mentioned the final climb in Foix, which goes up to 11% across its 11 kilometres. So basically, if the action is contained to that climb and that climb alone, it's still going to be a day where all hell will break loose, I think.
I don't think it will. I think something will happen in the penultimate climb, because it's close enough to the finish that, you know, that kind of person who can't help but attack, your Pinots and your Bernals, that they just won't be able to help themselves, you know. And with the race so open, there's no room for people to be conservative. You know, with that final weekend, nobody's going to want to go into that with a tightly grouped bunch of GC contenders. You know, they'll want to put the race to bed, and this is the kind of stage where there's a chance to do that.
Now, you said that the next day is easier, and I totally agree with you. July 23rd, stage 16, Nîmes to Nîmes. Normally, you'd look at a stage such as this and conclude that, well, a whole lot of nothing is likely to be order of the day, and I'm going to concede that that's probably going to be the case. However, I mentioned the potential for echelons in the north and the Mistral in the south.
Yeah, I mean, just look at it in the map. You know, if you were to draw a map of France and have one of those cherubs with puffy cheeks blowing wind, it would be at that bit of France. You know, how often have we seen the transition between the Pyrenees and the Alps, the race ripped apart by echelons in this region? I mean, I'd be amazed if it doesn't happen. And that's where the guys who have experience in the classics, who have experience in riding echelons and forcing the pace and knowing when to send somebody into the gutter, can make hay while the sun shines. You know, and that is your Geraint Thomases, your Vincenzo Nibalis. All of those guys are capable of riding in a proper wind-attacked stage. So, yeah, I mean, it's not hilly. It's going to be very interesting, though. And I think it's more likely than not that we'll get echelons. And, yeah, bring it on. I love that kind of crap.
So to the Alps then, stage 19 on July 26, Saint-Jean-de-Maurienne to Tignes, 123 kilometres, so quite a short stage and definitely a key stage. The 12 kilometre col de Isaran comes after just 85 kilometres gone and is actually the highest paved pass in the Alps. Even better, ASO has decided to award some time bonuses up at the top of it.
Yeah, it's quite exciting. As ever, you've picked the second of two mountain stages, and you've picked absolutely one of the gems of the race for me. They've got in their legs from the previous day, Col de Var, Col des Ward, and the Galibier. Now that's a descent to the finish, so we're going to have all the, you know, everybody's going to go, oh, watch Vincenzo Nibali attacking the descent of the Galibier. But for me, the main thing about that day is loading their legs for the following day. It goes up to 2,770 metres over the Isaran, which is just evil. And the worst thing is, to get there, it's pretty much all uphill. You know, I think the first 85 kilometres of the race is uphill. So the fatigue from the previous day is just going to build and build and build. You add to that, you know, the climb up to 2,113 metres at Tiene for the finish. It's just going to be, if Alejandro Valverde is still in contention at this point, if this doesn't break him, he's going to win the bloody tour. You know, I mean, because this is how you break Alejandro Valverde written all over it. You know, it's not just over 2,000 metres, it's 2,770 metres. You know, they're breathing with less oxygen in the air and they're having to work like an absolute dog to get there all day. It's just vicious. It's a cruel and unusual stage and I love it. And it's short. You know, that's the other thing, is they're not going to just quietly pedal up and tackle the monster that is the Isernan slowly. The stage is only 126.5 kilometres. Yeah. So it's going to be absolutely mental.
So then to the following day, stage 20, Abbeville to Val Thorens, 131 kilometres long on July 27th, another key stage, another short stage, but it culminates in a 33 kilometre climb up to Val Thorens.
Yeah, over the Cormier de Roselon, classic climb. Anything around Abbeville we've seen in the tour so often. And a kind of wee rest over a climb that's only 1,190 metres, and then the climb, the Oatcat climb to Val Thorens, and another short stage. You know, this is the short stages I was talking about at the head of the show. You've got the fatigue from the big day, followed by the difficult day yesterday on the 26th, and finally, you've got this short 130 kilometre stage with just an evil finish. And short enough that people are going to attack. There's nothing to lose for people if they're behind. They might as well go for it today. You know, this is the point where you look at Nairo Quintana, he'll attack like a demon and take not quite enough time as he prepares to peak for the fourth week. You know, it's a stage where everything will be on the line. Whoever is in the yellow jersey is going to have to work to keep it. Anybody that wants that jersey has no chances left. You know, this is it. There's nowhere to hide. And we'll see if people are prepared to ride for third or fourth to keep their points, or whether there are still some people in contention who genuinely want the race and are prepared to take it to whoever's in yellow at that point. This is, you know, all human life is here. This is where there's nowhere to hide. It's classic Tour de France terrain in a shorter format that's going to encourage attack and racing. I think it's a fantastic final weekend. It's not fantastic for the riders. I mean, it's going to be hard. But I think we could, which is so unlikely in modern racing, I think we could easily see the jersey change hands, maybe even twice in the final weekend. And, you know, how fantastic is that for a prospect? And I think it's a genuine one. I think we've got enough people who are close enough that you could see the jersey swap the day before this, and then on this final day before the parade into Paris. I think I've got a good feeling in my water about this tour, mate. I really have.
Well, you said all human life is here. I think it's maybe time we look at all the humans who are in the picture to win the tour. I guess across the last 20 or so minutes, we have probably mentioned everybody that's likely to be in with a shout, but we should look at their chances individually and come away with some manner of prediction. We did, when looking at the Tour de Suisse, give a probably a somewhat hasty prediction, and I think we both agreed, and it would be somewhat of a shock given, you know, only a few weeks ago to have said something like this, but I'm going to go with Egan Bernal to win the 2019 Tour de France, and I can't actually believe that I'm saying that, even at this point.
Well, I don't disagree. He's certainly one of my five-star favourites. Far more than his teammate Geraint Thomas, and that's not a comment on Geraint's quality as a rider. I just don't think we've seen enough of Thomas to place him in that top favourite spot. He could entirely possibly surprise us and ride the same way he did in that magnificent victory last year. But of the people in Team Ineos, Egan Bernal is the guy. And I come back to that performance enhancement. You know, there's all the conspiracy theories and stuff. They're sending them out with 6 grand chains. you know, a chain that is $6,000, and you go, what the hell is this? You know, this is smoke and mirrors. It's you know, marginal gains distraction. The claim is that it saves them 10 watts. Now, that's huge. You know, people train all season and don't get an extra 10 watts. So, you know, Egan Bernal is both the real deal. We saw that at Suisse. He's an attacking, interesting rider. He's untested over 3 weeks, but I see nothing to indicate that he won't be able to last. You know, I think he's got to be a five-star favourite. So you're picking him. I think Geraint Thomas is an interesting pick, which some people will make, but I've actually changed my mind. I don't think Egan Bernal's going to win the Tour de France 2019, which virtually guarantees he will, because the Ginger Shaman will come into play. I think Thibaut Pinot's going to win.
You know, I knew you were going to say that. And I can totally understand why you would pick Thibaut Pinot. And I would be delighted to see a French winner of the Tour. I think your reasoning, I'm going to read into probably what you're going to say. Your reasoning is, you know, not many time trialing kilometres across the route will favour him, and he has been, to make up a word, so attacky across this season that, you know, if there's a tour that Thibaut Pinot can win, it's this year's tour. So I don't think you're mad at all for picking him.
No, this is 2012 for Bradley Wiggins, 2019 for Thibaut Pinot. Mm-hmm. You know, if Thibaut Pinot's DS had lain down a big pile of cash at the doorstep of the ASO route designers and said, design me a tour that suits Thibaut, it would be this one. And that's why I'm picking up. But the whole thing, and one of the reasons I was talking about the jersey changing hands at the end, is the field is incredibly deep. You know, people talking about Chris Froome not being there. There is nobody at the end of this 3 weeks that's going to say, oh, you know, they won in Chris Froome's absence. Because there's such strength and depth. You know, if you look at Mitchell and Scott with Simon and Adam Yates, either of those guys, given the right circumstance, and it's more likely to be Adam, because Simon's been through the Giro and we've seen how well that goes for people in recent years. But, you know, both of them, they've got a strong team. Talked about Geraint Thomas. I mean, how spoilt for choice are Ineos if they've got Egan Bernal and Geraint Thomas as their joint plan A? Stephen Kreuzweg, you know, Roman Bardet, Nairo Quintana, Vincenzo Nibali. And you've got people. I'm really interested to see how Thijs Benoot performs. Because we've always thought about him as a strong single day racer, but he's morphing really nicely into a tour rider. We saw him perform really strongly in the pre-Tour de France races. So I've got probably 10 folk that could conceivably win, given a following wind and if everything falls right. But I think it's going to be between either of the Ineos guys. Actually, I never even mentioned Jakob Fuglsang. What's he been like this year? Mm-hmm. And that's the point. We can just keep going on. Richie Port. I mean, I'm trying not to laugh while I say that, but, you know, some people are mentioning him. Young Enric Mas. Just off the top of my head, these names are spilling out, and all of them are capable of a performance in this tour. It might be one of those tours, like, you know, Fignon's first win, where we see the breakthrough of a rider who's going to be one of the greats of all time. And it might be, you know, it might be a tour where we see an old hand like Vincenzo Nibali towards the end of his career pull out one final great win. Even TJ Van Garderen, for God's sake, has been riding really well. You know?
Yeah, just, I mean, so many I think people. We are, you know, kind of maybe, I don't want to say scraping the bottom of the barrel, that's very insulting, but I think there are some names there. You've mentioned that while they have the stature of a rider that could win a Tour de France,
they're solid with, top tens.
Yeah, I'm going to say Adam Yates, because I don't think he has looked the type of rider that are in the kind of form where I would solidly put my money behind Adam Yates winning the Tour yet.
And you expect him to have a bad day, don't you? That's the
thing.
Yeah,
unfortunately, you do. And I'm kind of looking through the team going, that's not a team, to me, that can support a GC win. I do look at Team Ineos, of course, and, you know, in the shape of Geraint Thomas, Bernal, Jonathan Castrovejo, Mikael Kwiatkowski, Gianni Moscon, Wout Poels, Luke Rowe and Dylan Van Baarle. That's a tour-winning squad for me. The one interesting thing is, I mean, you're absolutely right to highlight, as you did, that the team will have put equal faith behind both of those GC guys and Thomas and Bernal. I honestly think that Geraint Thomas's nose will have been put at a joint by the fact that he has to go in with a co-leader. Mm-hmm. I'm not suggesting for a second that Geraint Thomas took any kind of joy from his friend Chris Froome crashing out in the way that he did. But I do think from that point on, he was right to assume he would be the sole focus for Team Ineos going in to defend his Tour de France title. And I also would like to point out that I'm sure the understanding on how Chris Froome rode in support of Geraint Thomas to win last year would have been repaid for Chris Froome going for his fifth mm-hmm. by Geraint this coming year. But I do think there will have been a little you know, mote in the eye of Geraint's soul in now having to accept this young upstart coming. And it is very much like Laurent Fignon, and I'm glad you brought him up. I can't see an Egan Bernal coming to the Tour and coming away with it, mm-hmm. much to the surprise of everyone. Another rider you mentioned there, and I think it's worth looking, you know, at the opposite end of the scale, is Vincenzo Nibali, and whether he will play, or I'm predicting he will play very much a waiting game and just seeing how the Tour falls for him. If he is in a position, come stages 19 and 20, to upset the apple cart, and as I'm saying that, I'm aware of something I said last week or a couple of weeks ago regarding Vincenzo Nibali and perhaps this ambush at the 11th hour is an Astana thing rather than a Nibali thing. But that being said, I do think that Vincenzo will wait till the end of the Tour, and if the Tour has fallen in a way that suits him at the death, that he will capitalise on it. So there's lots of scenarios that could play out. But the other one I want to mention is what's going on at Movistar with their decision yet again to go with this triumvirate of Jesus. Quintana, Landa and Valverde. Why haven't they learned that this won't work? I can't see how it's going to work again this year.
I think the old one out there is Mikel Landa. And I think what they do is they don't have sufficient faith in Nairo to put a team four square behind him. And I can't actually blame them for that. You know, if you look at his performances recently, I'm not sure I'd have complete faith in them. It's Alejandro Valverde's team at heart. You know, emotionally, the team belongs to him. Unzu is tied to, you know, Valverde in a way that's almost paternal. You know, so that's the reason that Valverde's there. And poor Mikel Landa is just, I'm saying poor, he's there because of his own choices and he's being paid perfectly well for it. But he's once again in a situation where he has no control over his own fate. You know, so I understand why they've done it. I don't think it's going to stand them in any sort of good stead again. Landa is capable of winning a big race like this, but only if the team's fully behind him. Valverde has shown that he's willing to work as a domestique, but I don't know about you, I've never seen him look leaner than he looks this year. You know, he looks absolutely ill, which is an indication that he's ready for a Grand Tour. I think he's going in there with aspirations as his career draws to a close. And he says he's going to retire at, what, 41 or something? So I think he's looking at this year, looking at the lack of time trial miles, looking at Chris Froome not being there and thinking, just as with Thibaut Pinot, actually, if they designed a tour for me, other than the bits over 2,000 metres where we don't know how he's going to perform and that'll be the big telling point, this is Alejandro Valverde's best chance. And Nairo Quintana, for me, it pains me to say it, I think he's just riding for the money just now. So I think Movistar will be there, but I don't think, I can't see any of those three actually winning the race.
I mean, the thing is, if they would get four square behind a rider, and if I would have to pick Mikel Landa as being the most likely to succeed, as it were, mm-hmm. the team's actually really good to be four square behind one rider. Yeah. You know, look at riders like Arviti and Nelson Oliveira, and especially Andre Amador. It's a great squad to actually you know, to get, as I say, behind one rider, it's just that at the top end of it, they don't seem to know what on earth is doing that they're doing, and it's not coming across as a, oh, you never know what we're going to do, cunning fox type arrangement. It just looks like too many chiefs and not enough Indians to be very un-PC, as it were.
I was just going to say, you gave me a row for that a few months ago.
I think I did, yeah, so I apologise for that. My mind was already fleeting across to another rider, I think, that would be perhaps ill-advised to miss out, especially how well the team is doing at the minute, and that's Rigoberto Urán over at EF Education. It's been a fantastic season for them. I don't know what Urán's form's like, but I can see the mood in that camp being, you know, over the moon at the minute. And if they can carry that through, I think rather than TJ Van Garderen, Rigoberto Urán might be the rider for them this year.
They are a team absolutely on top of their morale as much as their form. They're riding extremely well, particularly when you consider their relatively modest budget. And I think they're going to be a factor in the race. I don't think they'll be right up at the sharp end, although Urán is certainly capable if he turns up, you know, with his best legs. But I think we'll see Education First very, very often forcing the pace in at the front of this race. And I expect two or three stage wins from them, actually, at the very least. I think they could be a fantastic team. I don't think they'll be a GC guy, but I would love to be proven wrong. I would love to see Urán finally take, you know, the biggest prize in the sport. But it's a bit of a stretch for me.
Yeah, I can totally understand that. As I say, I just wanted to kind of mention them. As I say, would be ill-advised not to, given how strong a season that team is having. Moving away from yellow jersey stuff briefly.
Who's going to be second behind Peter Sagan in
green? That's exactly the question I was about to ask.
I think Sagan's got a real problem in this race, and it's that he won't know who any of his teammates are. Because they've all won national championships.
And he hasn't.
Well, I've seen a lot of people say he's never ridden the Tour with in a standard team jersey. Of course, Killian was the one to point out that's bollocks. He rode for Liquigas in 2012 in the team jersey.
Yeah.
But, you know, all joking aside, Bora Hansgrohe have swept up the national championships. Max Schachmann, Patrick Conrad, Davide Formolo, Sam Bennett. And, you know, because Peter didn't win it, of course his brother Juraj won it. Mm. He's got the green jersey, isn't he? I mean, he's an Eric Zabel or Sean Kelly now, possibly even better in terms of riding the green jersey. There are people who could have challenged him, and I'm thinking particularly about Mick Matthews, but of course Matthews talked about how he's done no sprint training all year because he was told to devote himself entirely to preparing to support Tom Dumoulin because Sunweb were lacking in the hills. So, yeah, Sagan's going to win the green, unless he falls off or crashes, which is always a possibility. But he's looking to me like he's coming into, I mean, we saw it in recent races, he's looking like he's coming into form at just the right time. And he's a clever rider, he'll dose his efforts, he'll perform brilliantly. It's got Sagan written all over it.
Dealing with a couple of kind of potentially political issues that have stemmed from what you've said there regarding Mick Matthews. I also see just today that Tom Dumoulin is saying it's unthinkable at the minute that he could leave Team Sunweb, which of course, and you know, if you translate for common sense, he's already at the door.
He's putting up his manager's phone number, wouldn't he?
Absolutely. You know. The other one I want to just briefly touch on is Mark Cavendish being left out of the Dimension Data squad. Any thoughts on that?
They had to do it. You know, I was chatting to quite a few subscribers about this over the last 8 days, actually, because credit to one of our subscribers, and God knows how he did it, but he managed to hear it about a week before anybody else. You know who you are, but I'll keep you secret in case you've got secret sources. I think they had to do it. I mean, I would have left them behind. Emotionally, it would have been really nice for them to take him just as a swan song, if you like. You know, because I think we are approaching that point where Cav has to hang up his wheels. There was a really good piece in Cycling Weekly, I think, by Peter Cossens, about how Cav can bounce back from this. But I'm not sure he can. You know, the whole illness thing and the way it's affected his body and his recovery, he's not the Mark Cavendish who I still believe is the greatest sprinter we've ever seen in the sport. So Dimension Data are in deep shit. You know, as a team, they really feel like they're on the rocks. They need to win stages. Now, we've seen Eddie Bosenhagen coming into form. We've seen Steve Cummings coming into form. They have to throw everything that they've got at stage wins. And if Mark Cavendish had been even in questionably good form, you know, if he'd been in a quarter as good form as we would expect to see him, you know, when he was last dominant, what was it, 2 years ago? They would have taken him because he might have been in with a shout, because some of the other big time sprinters that we're used to are nowhere. You know, Marcel Kittel springs to mind. The fact they didn't take him, I think, is indicative of just how far from his best Mark is. So, you know, I bow down before him as the best sprinter of all time. I think Dimension Data would have been mental to take him.
Now, before we go, it's time we mercilessly whipped you in the direction of the Velocast online shop, where there are some brand new items to tempt you, all with a head nod towards the Tour de France.
They've been flying out the door, mate. The t-shirts are printed on demand for us, and all joking aside, I had to turn off notifications on my phone for one of them because it was pinging so often it was annoying my wife. So you're missing out being with the cool kids if you don't go to the shop and give us lots of money. You know, you need to go there and just spend, obviously.
Obviously. And there will be more designs appearing throughout the tour. So visit shop.velocast.cc to see what we've got on offer at the moment. So that's our look at the Tour de France route for 2019. Join us on Saturday as we start our 3-week-long daily adventures in the next edition of The Velocast.